I'd like to turn you to Genesis chapter 31 and suggest that maybe you should keep your bulletin open, because while there are 55 verses in the chapter, I don't want to read all 55 verses. But unless you have those numbers in front of you, you may not be able to follow very well. Genesis chapter 31, we'll start with the first 9 verses. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, "Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's he has acquired this wealth." And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. And Yahweh said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you." So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock, and said to them, "I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable toward me as before. But the God of my fathers has been with me, the God of my father. And you shall know, and you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled will be your wages, then the flocks bore speckled. If he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me." If I could skip down to verse 14. Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, "Is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it." So Jacob arose and set his sons and his wives on camels, carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. And so he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river, and headed toward the mountains of Gilead. If I could go down to verse 26. Now Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs and timbrel and harp. But you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. And now you have done foolishly in so doing. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful that you do not that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.' And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods?" Then verses 34 and 35. Now Rachel had taken the household idols and put them in the camel's saddle and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent, but did not find them. And she said to her father, "Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me." And he searched, but did not find the household idols. Then if I could take down to 43 and read through verse 50. Now Laban answered and said to Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters, these children are my children, this flock is my flock, all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore come and let us make a covenant to you and I. Let it be witness between you and me." So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. And Jacob said to his brethren, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made a heap. And there they ate upon the heap. Laban called it Yegar Sedutha. Jacob called it Galeed. Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me." Therefore, it was called Galeed. Also Mizpah, because he said, "May Yahweh watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, behold, God is witness between you and me." That far, as we read from a much longer chapter. I chose to go through the whole chapter because it is one historical context, and breaking it up would leave us with questions about review. So, perhaps easier to do. But the question of the passage is, what is it that makes us act? What makes us do something? Well, the Holy Spirit, of course. But how does he normally do that? Jacob manipulated, as had Abraham and Isaac and Sarah and Rebekah, each striving to make God's promises come to pass, whether it was Sarah's embarrassment or Abraham's desire for a son. The son that God had promised, which Ishmael was their solution, but it wasn't God's. Or Isaac's seeking to set up Esau in spite of God's promise. Or Rebekah's seeking to deceive Isaac so that Isaac would put Jacob where God had promised by her manipulations. Faith? Yeah. But not faithful. Yahweh, you see, is not a God like the other gods, like the other idols of the world, the ones of men's imagination. Each of the ones we have mentioned, with the faith that they had, but unfaithfulness in them, sought to manipulate the world and God to get the job done that God had promised. Because they looked at God, they looked at Yahweh as if he were one of the gods. They didn't understand him as sovereign. They didn't understand him as the only God. They may have thought he was the biggest God. But they didn't understand him as the only one who was. And so there were other contestants. Jacob, well, by Jacob running from Esau, by Jacob deceiving Esau and Isaac, by his use of magic, or what he thought was magic, in the building of the flocks, and now by blatant fear, Jacob is treating Yahweh like any one of the other gods. Fear? Well, he had fear when he ran from Esau. His fear was that Yahweh could not keep his promises without help. That was the same fear he expressed as he is manipulating, in his mind, Laban's flocks. Fear, because Jacob cannot control the family any longer as he seeks to be wealthy enough to go home. He couldn't control Laban's family. At first, he was well-received because he was adding to their wealth. Now some of that wealth is being siphoned off and it's going to Jacob. And the family's not happy, and Jacob's not in control of it. So Jacob now is in fear of what's going to happen next. And so we started the chapter this way. He doesn't see the sovereign hand of God. He doesn't see God's power, that Yahweh will step in and exercise his power to bring about his will, even using the sinfulness of men. That's only one example of many. This one is only one example of many in Scripture. If we are not careful, we also will not see his sovereign hand. For it's frequent. Here's how Jacob did. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's he has acquired his wealth. So where Jacob had been well received and been considered a blessing, as Laban once said to him, surely Yahweh has blessed me because of your presence here. My gods weren't doing such a good job, but when you came, and Yahweh's the God of your ancestor Abraham, and the God of your father Isaac, it must have been him. Either that or the gods you don't even proclaim. They wouldn't bless you, so it must have been him. But now there's jealousy. And that jealousy is poisoning the relationship. Jacob has become more wealthy than their father, therefore more wealthy than they are. Jacob has made his money manipulating Laban's resources. Surely the brothers had a reasonable idea that something was going on. They wouldn't attribute it to Yahweh, but they attributed it to Jacob doing something, even if they didn't know what, whether it was magic or something else. They're disregarding Laban's abuse, whether it's of his daughters or of Jacob, or of God's providence. All they see is that what they used to consider a blessing is now being taken away from them. And Jacob's the man. He's the bad guy. Now, Laban's jealousy is obvious too. Verse 2. Jacob saw the countenance of Laban. Indeed, it was not favorable toward him as before. So Jacob looks, and while Laban is not quite so verbal about it, it's obvious to Jacob that Laban is just as frustrated and just as angry with him and just as jealous about what's happening, because no matter what he seems to try to do, it always works out in Jacob's favor. That complaint's going to be made later in the chapter. And so Laban is upset too. Jacob is now terrified of what could happen. He no longer is the honored member of the family. He can no longer trust that when they have a family dinner, somebody won't be there to assassinate him, or somebody won't be there trying to poison him. He can no longer trust that the brothers will take care of his flocks, which is probably one of the reasons why he's been taking care of his flocks at the end of the last chapter. He no longer can trust who? And that's the question. He can't trust Laban and his family, right? Well, that's true. But he also can't trust the God who promised to take care of him, that he will take care of him in spite of the anger and frustration of Laban and his family. And so instead of in prayer saying, Lord, this is what I should do, and instead of integrity saying to Laban, it's time for me to go home, he had started that, but then he stayed for another 6 years to make his money. And as he was making his money, he perhaps got comfortable. And now it is only the anger of Laban and his sons that move him to action. But God's hand is in that anger. God has designed that. And God has brought it about. He brought it about by how he dealt with the flocks. He brought it about by how he has dealt with the jealousy and how he has blessed Jacob in all that he has done. And so in verse 3, Yahweh said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you. If God spoke to you, what would you do? Well, of course you'd try to obey, right? Would you obey and say, God said do it, I'll do it? Or would you look around and see what was the wisest way to do what God told you to do? One trusts God completely. The other says, well, you got to be careful about this. Jacob is the latter. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock. Why didn't he go into town and to the house and say, okay, it's time for us to move. We'll tell everybody in the family we're moving. We're taking all our stuff and we're going off back off to Canaan, back to my father's house. Because Laban might get mad. And Laban's sons might get mad. And the people of Padan Aram, who still consider Jacob to be very wealthy, but also very much alone, but he's not. Yahweh's there, and Yahweh's bigger than the whole country, bigger than the whole world. But Jacob has problems with that. Now please, as I say these things about Jacob, you're going to get the idea that I don't like Jacob. Okay? I don't like Jacob's sins. What Jacob becomes in the next chapter is monumental. Okay? But Jacob's sin is what God uses to bring about in Jacob the response that God desires so that he can demonstrate his faithfulness. And then he steps in and adds to that faithfulness conversion. So Jacob called Rachel and Leah to the field, to the flock, and said, and he makes his defense for why he's doing it. I see everything's going bad here now. It's been a good relationship for a while, but it's still been abusive. After all, 7 years is a little much for you girls. 14 years is a little much for two of you. Well, four of you, but whatever the case. And I wasn't getting rich. Now 6 years, And we were making real financial progress, but we weren't quite rich enough for me to say, okay, now I can afford to go home. But things have come to a head, and I have to go. And so he makes his defense. Your father tried to cheat me and deceive me, changed my wages 10 times. Calvin and other commentators say the 10 may be a slight exaggeration because 10 is one of those numbers that the Hebrews use figuratively with great regularity. And so it may just have been, he deceived me all the time. And that may be how we would have said it. Certainly in the last 6 years, it would have been at least 12 opportunities for Laban to have changed the wages depending on how the sheep were breeding and what offspring they were bearing. But there may well have been more. He changed my wages, and he explains how he did that. So when the flocks conceived, here's what I said. Here's what God told, he says God told me to do. The angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob, and I said, here I am. He said, lift up your eyes and see the rams which leap on the flocks. Okay, they are streaked, speckled, and spotted gray, for I have seen what Laban is doing. So now he's saying, Yahweh's been doing this. It's not me cheating your father. That's a true statement, up to a point. Okay? Jacob doesn't say, I was trying to cheat your father, but God's the one who made it work. He just says, if the God that your father understands is bigger than he is, and the God who's been taking care of me, Yahweh, if that's the God who told me to do something, then your father doesn't have anything to say, and neither do you. And so as he describes this to them, he explains his reasons for what he's doing in his mind, the manipulation, the magic. Now we look at that. Yahweh doesn't need that. The God who upholds the creation by the word of his power doesn't need our help, doesn't need us to try to manipulate genetics. If he's going to do it, he can do it himself, if we trust it. And that's my point here with Jacob. Jacob's recount of the abuse, which is believable, okay, only emphasizes his defense to his wives. And so in verse 14, now Rachel and Leah answered and said, is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? He has sold us, and he has completely consumed our money. He didn't give them a dowry. He paid Jacob in them, and he charged Jacob in labor, and they never saw any of it. They were still living in their father's house. Their father still had technical ownership of all the things that Jacob had until 6 years ago. And even then, it just started getting strained. But they weren't living with Jacob. Jacob was almost a slave who had a family, and that family was designed by the slave owner to tie him to his slavery. And the girls look at that and they say, that's what we see. All the riches which God has taken from our father, which are really ours and our children's. Now, Rachel's not saying Yahweh. Okay, she's saying Elohim. Whether you want to see it as singular or plural, she's not recognizing the covenant God who's dealing with him. I stress that because, down in verse 19, Laban had gone to shear his sheep and Rachel had stolen the household idols. If Yahweh's your God, why do you steal anybody's household idols? Why do you bother with them at all? Unless you're going to melt the gold and silver down. And then that's theft anyway. All those things which God has taken from our Father really are ours. Notice whose they are in her opinion. They're not Jacob's. They're Rachel's and Leah's and Zilpah's and Bilhah's and the kids. Because, well, We said it last week about Jacob and winding up with four wives, that he has become not the master of his house, but the servant of his house. And not the servant in a good sense, he's the slave. They make the decisions. Leah makes the decision that Zilpah becomes his wife. Rachel makes the decision that Bilhah becomes his wife. And Jacob acquiesces. He's not the leader of his house. He's not the master of his house. So then Jacob arose, and Jacob flees. While Laban is gone shearing his sheep, okay, 3 days' journey at least from where Jacob was, Jacob then packs up everything and leaves. Now, it's interesting that Jacob's proposition to his wives goes against all of what their culture would have done. They're going out into the unknown. Except that Aunt Rebecca had done that, and it worked out pretty well for her. So maybe getting away from Padan Aram and away from Laban and grandfather, maybe that wouldn't be so bad a thing. In addition, they were poverty-stricken too. If Laban died, they were at their brother's mercy. If Jacob wasn't there, they were even more at their brother's mercy. And they didn't think their brothers were very merciful, apparently. So they're ready to leave because God has worked a separation in that family so that they are now ready to do which goes against their culture. They're ready to go off out into the proverbial Das Blaue Hinein, called the land of Canaan, which they've never seen or heard of except by rumor or perhaps report from Abraham's family and Isaac's family, which Jacob is the representative of. And so they go. Now Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled, so he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey. Notice that Jacob takes everything he has. Laban takes his entourage. What's in his entourage? Well, Jacob doesn't know, and we don't have a real clear picture. But the implication is that the entourage were those who were his personal bodyguards, the ones who took care of his property, the ones who maintained his position in town. So he has a small force of security guards. And they can travel faster than flocks and herds and women and children, even if the women and children are riding on camels. Just too big a parade. The smaller group can catch up to them. Now God, he pursued them for 7 days' journey and overtook them in the mountains of Gilead after Jacob had crossed the river Euphrates into the land that was called Canaan. Laban catches up to them, but God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad." Now again, that's not the covenant name of God, but it is the God that, or at least a representative of the gods that Laban would have recognized. And so Laban says, "The gods came to me, and the gods said, I'm supposed to behave in this case, that they're involved in this and not me." Okay? They're doing this, and I can't fight against them. So Laban overtook Jacob. Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains. Laban with his brethren pitched their tents in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said, "Why have you done this? What have you done? You've stolen away unbeknownst to me, carried away my daughters like captives with the sword. Why did you flee secretly and steal away from me?" The accusations of, "I'm in charge, you're a runaway slave. Why have you done this? You've taken my property. You've taken my daughters. You've taken my grandchildren. You've taken my flocks. You're a runaway slave and a thief. You didn't allow me to kiss my grandchildren, my sons and daughters. You've done foolishly. I might have sent you away with joy and songs and timbrel and harp." And in his defense, while I doubt very much that he would have, Jacob didn't give him that chance. Because Jacob was in fear of him. Jacob didn't say, God can make this a parting that is joyful and a parting that is good and quiet and peaceful. Yahweh's not capable of that. Laban is too strong. The gods that Laban worships are too strong. And my trust in Yahweh is not strong enough. So I'm running. And so Jacob's leaving is as sinful as Laban's abuse. But then Laban really betrays himself. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night. Well, if he's really the God who spoke to him last night, and he certainly is, but Laban doesn't recognize him, he would have used the name that Abraham would have used, and he doesn't. He spoke to me, but it's in my power to do good or bad, to do harm to you, but the God of your father spoke to me and told me that I should be careful to speak neither good nor bad to you. And now surely you have gone because of you greatly long for your father's house. Throw him a sop. This is why you ran away, I understand. If you come back, we can forgive this. But why did you steal my gods? That should have pricked Jacob's conscience. And it does to some extent, but not much. Jacob says, well, anybody who stole anything of yours, if you find it with them, then I am guilty and they are guilty, and we'll take care of it. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have taken of yours and take it with you. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen the gods. Again, a demonstration that Jacob's not the master of his house. So Laban went into the tents and he searches around and he can't find them. He goes into the tent, which is Rachel's, and Rachel's sitting on a camel saddle. Well, probably she didn't have too many camp chairs. And the camel saddle would have been something that they would have sat on when it wasn't on the back of the camel, and they would have sat on it when it was. So she's sitting on the camel saddle, not an unusual chair under those circumstances. In the saddlebags of that camel saddle are the household idols. And Rachel says, Father, please, don't be insulted that I can't stand up, but sanitary napkins haven't been invented yet, and it's my period, and I can't stand up. And Laban says, okay. I don't know whether he believed her or not, but he acts as if he did. And probably out of some kind of respect, he does. He certainly knows about the normal bodily functions. And so the theft goes undetected. So Jacob was angry now. You searched and you didn't find him. You made that accusation of me and you were wrong. And now Jacob isn't saying to him, okay, you were wrong. Now, are you prepared to repent? Jacob says, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you have pursued me hotly? You have searched all my things. What part of your household things have you found? Set it here before me and my brethren. You're the liar. Okay? And this sounds like Jacob's making progress. And in one sense, he is. He's standing up to Laban, which he probably hasn't done for years. But he's not standing up for Laban in God's strength, but in his own. I have not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by animals I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was in the day, the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. I have been in your house these 20 years, and I have served you 14 years for your 2 daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me. Notice who he's mentioning. It isn't Yahweh. He knows Yahweh's name, but he's using the generic word for God. All of the commentators, whether good ones or bad ones, recognize that when he does that, there's a problem in his relationship with the God who is. What have I done? If it hadn't been the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac, so if it hadn't been the God of Isaac, my father, and the God of Abraham, his father, and the fear of Isaac? Well, I guess I could ask a couple questions, but the most obvious should be, what is Isaac? He's rich. He has lots of servants and lots of slaves, and he has lots of friends who are at least economic friends in the land of Canaan. And if now Laban is in the land of Canaan, and Jacob's got more friends now than Laban has, he'd better behave himself. But even back in Padan Aram, if Isaac had wanted to send money or men or a military force of hired soldiers, he could have done it and made life hard. And so Laban had been a little bit restrained because he knew who Jacob's father was. And so instead of my God, it's the fear of my father. If that had not been with me, surely you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands, and he rebuked you last night. And then Laban responds. These are my daughters, these are and their children. This is my flock, all that you see is mine, but what can I do? All these things are really mine, but the gods are against me and the political forces are against me, so I'm powerless now. I brought 50 or 100 men. Your father can call on 50 or 100,000 men. I can't stop this. So let's make peace. And so they make a covenant. They make a covenant, and they set up this parting. Laban said to Jacob, here is a heap, and here is the pillar. They have set up the nature of this place of a covenant, and they are going to make that covenant. They have named it. Laban said to Jacob, here is the heap, and here is the pillar, which I have placed between you and me. Who put up the pillar? Thought Jacob put that pillar up. Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar, and Jacob said to his brethren, gather stones, and they took the stones and they made the heap, but Laban's taking credit for this. Because after all, I'm still your father-in-law, and I'm still your master, and just because now I have lost you doesn't take away what really is mine. The heap is witness, the pillar is witness. I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap and pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. Notice it's not the covenant name of God again. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. And Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountains and called his brethren to eat bread. And they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban arose, kissed his sons and daughters, blessed them. And Laban departed and returned to his place. So there's the parting. And the parting leaves us with this distinct impression that there's somebody who's there and running everything, but like the proverbial elephant in the room, he's not seen. Jacob swears a covenant by the fear of his father. Okay? My father's bigger than you are, and my father can make you live up to this. Maybe he can. But isn't God the one who should be doing this? Isn't Yahweh the God who has called you, Jacob? Isn't Yahweh the God who promised you he would take care of you? Isn't that what he said to you? Go home, I will take care of you. Jacob's having trouble with that. What do I want you to remember? I want you to see how Yahweh uses our fears and our sins to move us. Jacob's sin is in going. It's in going because of his attitude. It's in going because his attention to details is about his wealth rather than about obeying his God. Laban's greed, passed on to his sons, passed on by abuse to his daughters and of his sons probably, and his abuse of Jacob, all of those things Yahweh is using to prepare this separation. So that all of the sin that's involved, God is using so that Romans 8:28 is true, that all things must work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to his purpose. Even if it's your sin, even if it's somebody else's sin, all things must work together for good so that you can't say to God, why are you doing this to me? You're saying, Lord, this is what you are doing. Help me to understand and help me to respond to it as your word tells me to respond. Help me to do what's right, not what people expect. Help me to do what's righteous, not what my anger would like to see happen. Not what my fear would like to see happen. You see, God's sovereign decree brings about his will using man's sin, even ours. Not in spite of. Okay, if I say that God's will is strong enough he can get done what he wants to do in spite of what man tries to do against him, then he's not really sovereign. He's just bigger and stronger and smarter than everybody else. God uses those sins to move us to those who are called according to God's purpose. And so now God has parted Laban and Jacob, taken Jacob, taken him back to the land of Canaan, and now is going to put him in a place where he's afraid of his brother Esau. So now he's not even sure he has family and friends that he could call on to defend him against Laban. Until he wrestles with the angel at Peniel. Then things get different. Okay, and I want to emphasize that. Because God has set up all of the details, all of the things that were necessary, all of the heartbreak, all of the lack of trust in himself, all of the fear, so that he has nowhere else to turn. And God has set up his conversion. And God has done those things to give him life. He's not only changed Jacob's heart and mind, but he's changed Jacob's circumstances. All of it for Jacob's good. I'd like you to recognize Yahweh's faithfulness to his elect, even before their conversion. That happens in the next chapter. So our role, for those whom we love and for those whom we desire to see converted, for those whom we desire to affect, our children, our families, our role is to pray and to trust and to perform what God sets in front of us according to his revealed will, not our efforts to make it happen. We're praying that God will do it and that he will use whatever means he has chosen to use, and he will bring it to pass, and he will show me what my responsibility is in that action. And then he will use that to his glory. Note, please, the lack of faith in Rachel, at least, as well as in Jacob. Jacob at some point finds out that Rachel has those gods, although he doesn't seem to have found it out yet. But we never read that he destroys them or gets rid of them. And so we're looking at a family which is still separate from each other. And we're looking at a family which is still in sin. But we're seeing God's promise still the moving factor in moving that family into his plan and into his righteousness. We still see that. Because that's the nature of a sovereign God, the one who is God. Not the one who's big enough to get his will done because he's smarter and stronger than the rest of us. but because he's the only one who is. So here we are with family or friends or children or acquaintances that we want to see come to faith. Or we're looking at circumstances that look like they're going to force us to do something that we really didn't want to do. And our response is, pray. Because God is in charge of all of this. And God is moving these things to do, to force me to do, to work in me to do, to bring about in me what I would not have done myself. Because that's how he planned to use his Spirit to do it. You've heard me say it before, and I say it in a little bit of jest. He's not a fairy godmother. He doesn't come with a magic wand and zap you on the head and make you what he wants you to be. He confronts our sins. And in the confrontation of our sins, he turns us away from those sins to the righteousness that he had set for us. All glory and all praise belong to him. Because I can't even say, and I was smart enough, I finally caught on. I was brought, given new life, bought with a price. And he is my God. Bow with me in prayer.